When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Your new home journey starts at Fisher Homes, where everything is red, white, and new. Explore exclusive summer savings and start your journey by selecting your ideal home site and your dream community. Choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans and bring your style to life at the Lifestyle Design Center. Are you looking for a quick move-in ready home instead? Fisher Homes has options for those too. Fill out a form to connect with a new home advisor at fisherhomes.com to get started today before the sun sets on summer savings.
You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.
This is an iHeart original.
I don't want to make it seem like the overwhelming whiteness of the scene necessarily stopped me or stopped other scene kids of color. Like, scene kids of color often banded together and boosted each other up when, you know, the elite kids didn't. There were trains that were just for scene kids of color, which of course the white kids said was super racist. And I'm like, how many black people are on your train though? We did talk to each other, and we were talking about these issues even back then, even as kids in our like sort of unworldly way.
I'm Joanne McNeil, and this is Main Accounts, the story of MySpace. Episode 4, Scene Kids. By the mid-aughts, MySpace was a cultural phenomenon. Like this Saturday Night Live sketch.
What's up, everybody? I am pumped to welcome you to the Learning Annex's MySpace and You seminar. Today, we're going to help you guys set up a MySpace page so that you can communicate with the more than 6 million young people currently in the MySpace community.
Most depictions of MySpace in the media zeroed in on it as a scuzzy place where kids were getting into trouble.
One of the internet's most popular sites, posting messages that are tasteless, sometimes X-rated, and also illegal.
Tonight, a woman beaten, robbed, and then tormented by her attackers again days later.
The victim says that she was set up on a website that thousands of kids and adults use every day, the social networking site MySpace.
In 2007, nearly 80% of 12 to 17-year-olds in America use MySpace at least weekly. Technically, the age limit to use MySpace was 14, but it was easy to get around that age limit. Adults could sign up for an account with a fake birth year, so it showed they were 14 years old. Or 14-year-olds could say they were 18. 11-year-olds could have said they were 14. Or, as MySpace users often did to be cool, they might have said they were 99 years old. But even if MySpace had strictly enforced age limits, even if that were possible, 14 years old is still really young. MySpace amplified the ongoing moral panic around teenagers on the internet. In 2005, there was a movie called Hard Candy with Elliot Page playing a 14-year-old who meets a 30-something man over the internet. Without giving too much of the plot away, it might have inspired the more recent release, Promising Young Woman.
You just don't really look like the kind of guy who has to meet girls over the internet.
Well, I think it's better to meet people online first sometimes. You get to know what they're like inside.
For these young MySpace users, the youngest on the social network, many of the trials of teenhood were transposed from the locker rooms, lunchrooms, and high school corridors to the MySpace realm of testimonials and top eight. Harassment and bullying took on a new dimension. And on MySpace, the limits to who could bully you weren't constricted to other teens at school. anyone in the world with an account could give you grief. In 2009, a high school student received harassing messages on MySpace from her father's creditors. A collection agency working on behalf of JPMorgan Chase allegedly threatened her in an attempt to intimidate her father into paying back his loan. That's just one of the warped experiences that ordinary teenagers were having on MySpace, living their lives with online avatars. These experiences were bizarre, and it was all becoming commonplace. All the drawbacks to online attention that early influencers had to deal with, the underbelly of fame-seeking and celebrity obsession, the surveillance and scrutiny, that was impacting ordinary youth. But was it really worse than any reality that teenagers throughout history have known?
There's always been this backlash to youth culture that makes whatever the technology of the day is into the villain. There's something about the transition from childhood to adulthood that lends itself to the victimization of young people, but also to their liberation. And I don't think that I can extricate the two. I know that's complicated and messy, but what coming of age story isn't, you know?
That's Noor Al-Sabai, author of MySpace Scene Queens, which is forthcoming with the Remember the Internet series from Instar Publishing. Noor was an active MySpace user in her youth.
I don't remember exactly when I signed up for MySpace. I think it was right before I started high school. And I had some friends who were like, there's this website that we're all using to connect to people. And I was like, okay, cool, maybe I can meet some of my friends or meet some people who can become friends when I start school, because I was very nervous about going to high school. The first thing I remember on MySpace is finding this one girl's profile that was it was a completely fleshed out profile, which not many people had in the year 2005. She had a lot of interesting music. She wasn't even a scene kid herself. She was just like a pretty normal, like cool girl. And she had a song playing on her profile by the band My Morning Jacket, which I got into then at the ripe age of 14. And I developed a crush on this girl, of course. And so and didn't understand that part of myself at all. But yeah, that was the beginning of MySpace for me.
Noor had been on the internet for a while before MySpace, on sites like Habbo Hotel and Harry Potter fanfiction communities. She built an Orlando Bloom fan site when she was 12. But the immediate way that MySpace connected users to one another seemed totally new. That girl she noticed, MySpace seemed to encourage her to look.
I guess she was like friends with some people who I already knew. The kind of way you click through on someone's Instagram from a friend's profile or whatever. Just a very, it's weird to call it natural, but a very natural progression of just like how you find other people's profiles on a social network in pretty like organic social ways. Except this was, I believe, the first time I ever did that, making it a really different experience for me.
Noor quickly became immersed in the site. One thing appealing about MySpace was how popularity didn't translate the same to the internet. It wasn't the cheerleaders who seemed cool on MySpace, but kids with more of an edge.
It was a very interesting but confusing place to be in the high school social strata, because previously these would have been people considered freaks. You know, if we're going with the sort of Breakfast Club archetypes, these would have been the two characters who were wearing all black. And the way MySpace sort of amplified their reach made them out to be much more popular than they would have otherwise been without it, I think.
Queerness seemed to Noor as more accepted on MySpace. She was just figuring out that side of herself.
Part of the appeal of the site was just the general queerness of the place, where all the boys and the girls looked the same. And there was this level of very deliberate androgyny.
MySpace was, to use a term from the era, a scene. After the break, we're going to look deeper at the emo scene. That's right, the dark side of emo. LOL. Just kidding. BRB. For listeners over the age of 45 or under the age of 30, let's break down what emo, the music phenomena of the 2000s, was all about.
Explaining emo is like, well, how long do you have? This is a seminar level college course. But my connection to the emo movement style, it was basically about being very emotional, hence the emo part. And it was basically centered around like boys that cried and like had strong emotions. And the music was always like these sad boys with like dark hair and bangs in their eyes, just like crying about how mean girls are to them. But we were like over-validating that like extreme expression of emotion. And then, you know, the girls in the community also were just like, there was a lot of talk about mental illness, a lot of talk about depression. And it was kind of bonding over the fact that we feel like crap all the time, which is kind of just being a teenager. I mean, some people, myself included, did find out that we did have some mental illnesses, go figure. But it was a lot about like embracing sadness, embracing darkness, finding the aesthetic that suited somebody who felt like they were alone, felt like they were sad all the time.
Some of these emo bands had serious style too, like Panic at the Disco.
I chime in with a haven't seen people ever heard of. Closing a damn door, no. It's much better to face these kinds of things with a sense of voice and rationality.
They were sort of the big theatrical band that was coming up when I was in high school. And it is, it's very dramatic, it's very theatrical, it's very, you know, candlesticks on a dining table in a castle, but everyone's dead at the dinner party. Like it's super, super dramatic. So, you know, teens.
That's Alexis Ned. She's an entertainment reporter and author.
My first novel, Don't Hate the Player, is out right now, and I was a MySpace scene kid.
There is something funny about that era of being emo or goth, or where you could be the one at your school, but you're still part of some community. It's just like elsewhere. And in this case, it was like on the internet, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you sort of enjoy the feeling of being a little isolated because it means that you're validated by the online community who are all talking about how isolated they are while forming like these giant groups together or, you know, virtually. That was very much a part of the identity, whereas it was kind of like a Batman style. We all feel like Bruce Wayne, but then we get online and like we are the Knight.
Alexis had already felt like an outsider at school.
I grew up in northern New Jersey, and I went to a private school, a very small private school. And I'm also Black and Puerto Rican, visibly so. And it was a prep school. Everybody, almost everybody else in my grade was like very wealthy, white, preppy kids with, you know, they were popping the collars on their polos back then. I'm not sure if they're doing that now. I mean, they're bringing back the 2000s. And I'm like, Gen Z, don't pop the collars. You don't have to, whatever else you bring back. But that was very much the vibe. And I did not fit in there. For, I mean, racial reasons, but also I was, you know, a bit of a weird kid and a nerd. And for me, to identify against my peers at school was like the emo kids who had, you know, all the pale faces and the makeup.
MySpace is where Alexis refined her scene identity, adding strangers as friends because she thought, to look cool on MySpace, she needed a big friend count.
I just went from like 0 to 60 on like, I'm in ninth grade and I'm posting pictures from like my fencing tournament to like taking all of my regular friends off and just adding like hundreds of kids with like dark emo bangs and an eyeliner and like roar necklaces just every day, like hundreds of strangers. And I didn't really talk to any of them. It was just more about the number and like the courtesy of commenting on pictures, commenting on people's walls.
And from that moment on, Alexis was part of the MySpace scene.
Scene kids kind of prided themselves on being very vain, having a certain hairstyle, having certain makeups. Everything was about getting new pictures on MySpace, photoshopping the pictures. Like, I learned how to Photoshop because I was making my pictures look sceney, and I would like trade people shops of their photos, and they would like boost me on their profiles. Like, it was an actual currency, was like pictures and the pale face, stripes in the hair.
What kind of reactions were you hoping for, and what kind of reactions did you typically get if you put up a new avatar?
Yeah, on pictures and stuff, there was kind of like a code of the scene where it's like you usually don't tear people's pictures down unless they're like completely tragic. So really it's like you post a picture up, you tell people that you have a new picture up, and then your followers will comment on the picture, something else nice, like, oh, love your hair, so cute, rawr, XOXO, but you had to return it. And you would post on the forum, pick for pick, F for F, which is like friend for friend. And it always was reciprocal. So you were kind of passing along the positive, mostly completely pointless validation to each other, just to get like a little pop-up that said, you know, new picture comment, new friend request. It was very, very much a constant trade-off that just kind of sustained itself, as opposed to creating anything else outside of the community.
Did you have a sense of yourself being young in that community, though? Because even 14 for these are 23-year-old guys, maybe. Or...
Not really. I would say like 13 was probably young, but 14 seemed at the time definitely the appropriate age at which to enter a community of strangers on the internet. I mean, pretty much anyone over 18 was viewed as quite old.
You might be wondering how young Alexis, very, very young Alexis, even found all these other scenesters. A lot of that happened through these sorority-style clubs on MySpace called Scene Trains.
The scene train dealio went like this. Someone starts a scene train. They name it something. Usually it's an acronym that also has like a convoluted title. Like, one was like narcissistic a-holes and sadistic something, but it's spelled out NASA, so you could put NASA on there. And they would have these blog posts that would go out, and it was usually like very early internet like graphics where they had, you know, like little moving GIFs and music would play, and it was always presented in tiers. So like the train heads would be at the top with their very big pictures, and then like the VIPs within the train would have like medium-sized pictures. And then there was like the regular people who were still on the train who would get like smaller pictures. And the way to get into a train was you had to go through and you had to add as a friend every single person on that train. And then once they checked that you had added everybody, you could put your submission in. And it was basically a picture linked to your MySpace profile.
MySpace scene kids took these applications very seriously.
Some people had like legit applications, like written applications that you had to like email to people. I mean, some people did it by committee. Some people, it was just one person deciding like hot or not. Are you seen enough or you're not seen enough for our train to put your picture next to our pictures? That was how that process went along. And getting accepted on those lists was like the ultimate currency. Like, you would put the abbreviations of the trains you were on in your profile name. But those trains were curated by usually one or two people, the train heads. And basically, if you weren't hot enough, you didn't get on.
The thing that I'm still stuck on, why did people want to join this group in the first place? Like, what do you get once you get into the train?
Prestige. It was 100% prestige. Also, because with the... It was twofold. So like, if you were in a really good train, like people would just add you by default because like you were the best of the best in the scene. And the other thing was, because when the train got posted, you got added. So people that wanted to join your train had to add you as a friend. And I got rejected from a lot of them. And some the ones that I did get on, the ones that I was like super proud of actually getting into, they basically decided who got on the train by committee, and they would post in their group. And they would say, okay, here's the people that have applied, who's gonna get in?
Alexis was accepted into what was considered at the time a very cool, very prestigious scene train. One day, she was looking at the message board where people were discussing possible new members. There were a bunch of comments about one of the applicants. He was 15 and a person of color, like Alexis. The comments the other people in the train made about him shocked her.
They said that they couldn't accept him because he looked dirty. There was one girl, I'll never forget the comment, she says, like, he's cute, but I just want to, like, take some soap and scrub him off. I read that, and at first I didn't get it, because I was like, he looks fine. And then, like, it hit me. I was probably, like, 15, and I was like, oh my God, you guys are super racist. And that just, it stung. Like, I didn't feel like I had enough social capital to say anything about it. Because, you know, I would get kicked off the train, but also it wouldn't mean anything to them that another brown person was defending a brown person. And that was kind of the beginning of the end to the scene with me. Like, I faded out, and but I just cut ties with it.
After the break, we'll find out how Alexis grew out of seams and left MySpace for good. The racist comments Alexis observed in the scene train message board were not an isolated incident. It was jarring because the kids in the scene trains had accepted her in, but had they really?
And just watching the things that people would say about people trying to get on that train, it was just like, it was like horrendously racist, like beyond. I mean, like, N-words, W-words. I don't know if they just didn't think that I would... I do know. They did not care if I saw it or not. They were not thinking about me at all, even a little bit. Or anyone else who looked like me, because we were not their concern. And just reading all of that was, as I said, not my first racist experience, but it was the first time that I had self-selected a group by myself and forged a part of my identity and have faced immediate racist backlash in something that I picked for myself. This was something that I chose and I picked for myself, and I still stepped in the racist doo-doo. I thought that I was special than people. If I was good enough, if I was seen enough, if I was pretty enough, people wouldn't notice. It never works like that. And I thought that because we had so many other things in common, there's no way that those people could think that stuff about people like me, which is also a tremendous fallacy when it comes to whiteness and race.
Alexis turned to the scene because it seemed like everyone was commiserating over their intense emotions and sense of social exclusion. The racism she encountered on MySpace from the emo kids went against what she felt they had in common. Being an outsider.
Yeah, being an outsider, because I was an outsider at school, and I thought that those were my fellow outsiders, and I was not their fellow outsider.
Alexis had about 21,000 friends on MySpace at that point, but this experience was shattering.
Like, literally deleting all of them would have taken forever, so I just nuked the profile and went to college.
As for Noor, she did meet a lot of her MySpace scene friends in person. Her scene was on and offline.
Internally in scenes, it was definitely a benefit to the men in a lot of these bands. And culturally, even outside of what would have been considered scene culture, there was that sort of rock star hipster mentality that was popularized by Vice of that era, by the kind of parties that were happening in New York that we were trying to replicate in all of our suburban towns all over the country. The sort of very chic debauchery that we thought would make us so cool.
Noor was figuring out her identity as a queer woman, and MySpace was part of this development.
There were quite a lot of queer people and bisexuality, both for men and women, for boys and for girls, was very celebrated. I can't recall the number of times I saw posts that were just a collection of images of scene boys kissing. That was when girls got really into pictures of effeminate young men kissing each other. And a lot of the girls who were my bullies were bisexual themselves, which added a whole other dimension to it, because there was a level of rejection and a level of, you know, desire there that at, you know, at age 15, I was absolutely not prepared to deal with.
And I could imagine also elements of sexual harassment possibly too, when you're dealing with a number of bisexual women. Like, is that, would that be correct? Or?
Absolutely. That you hit the nail on the head with that one. And there was definitely, especially when drugs and alcohol were involved, there were women taking advantage of other women, or girls taking advantage of other girls. Girls who were procuring younger girls for these older men bands. Just really, really gross stuff that was way more grown up than I think we realized at the time.
She was living in Charlotte as a teen, which has a great music scene and a lot of bands on tour pass through, which meant a lot of older guys and bands passing through.
We, the scene kids, a lot of us ended up going that route, went from, you know, listening to and posting about hardcore music to listening to indie music. But it was very much the sort of hipper than thou mentality, that my favorite band is more obscure than yours. Like, you know, especially if you end up communicating with the people in the bands, which we were able to do via MySpace. And as has become pretty infamous now, there was not just communicating going on, but there was also older men in bands preying on teen girls. That was replicated on a national and regional scale with the music scene in my hometown, and had some pretty close calls myself with musicians and just men in these various scenes. Lots and lots and lots of girls that I knew in real life and online had more than close calls, both consensual and non-consensual, with some of these older men. There was a musician in the local scene who developed a reputation for going for some of the youngest girls who never, you know, suffered any consequences for it. It was a joke among people.
MySpace happened years before Me Too, and broad media reckoning around consent, sexual harassment, and issues like grooming. But it also wasn't the dark ages. Any reasonable person knew that it was wrong for grown men to hit on 15-year-old girls. Nor, as a young woman open to meeting people in person she knew from MySpace, was at risk.
This guy was an employee at the local American Apparel, and he invited me to his house to do a photo shoot, which even I, at the time, I think I knew that it was a red flag. I think I felt weird about it, but I was so flattered by the attention that I was like, you know, I was really interested in it. And then truly the moment, I don't even think the words were completely out of my mouth before my mom was like, there's no way, this guy is a creep. And I don't even think I protested that much, because it was a creepy situation. I think in that instance, he did slide into my DMs. We didn't have that terminology, but it was absolutely what was happening. And I think it was very much the same way, you know, when you see someone online that you think is cute now, like I did with the very first profile I remember seeing on the website, you know, they pique your interest, their photos pique your interest, and then their purported, you know, taste in music and film and art further draws you in. And yeah, that's how any kind of encounters, good or bad or neutral, all occurred there.
MySpace was a place of harassment, but it was also a place where Noor and Alexis both found themselves. As toxic as the scene could be, they found fellow travelers.
I don't want to make it seem like the overwhelming whiteness of the scene necessarily stopped me or stopped other scene kids of color. Like, scene kids of color often banded together and boosted each other up when, you know, the elite kids didn't. There were trains that were just for seeing kids of color, which of course the white kids said was super racist. And I'm like, how many black people are on your train though? There was like an even smaller community within it where complete strangers who also just happened to be seeing kids, you know, brown kids, black kids, even I guess Asian kids too. We did talk to each other and we were talking about these issues even back then, even as kids in our like sort of unworldly way. This wasn't something that just happened to me and I've internalized it. When I thought like, hey, that's really messed up, I had other people to talk to about that. That was a very formative experience for me. And I think a lot of other seeing kids of color, because we realized that we have to make a space within a space that we thought was our space on MySpace. Hey, look at that. And I miss those guys. I'm sure they're doing great.
Bad stuff happens on the internet. Racism. Creepy old guys. But the internet isn't all bad, is it? Look at Nora and Alexis. They are both authors. Those Harry Potter fanfiction communities and emo scene message boards were good for something.
It was training. It was absolutely training. And now we type really fast and have like slightly Wi-Fi poisoned brains, and it's great. Wouldn't have it any other way.
Me too. I am an author, and a lot of those writing skills were forged from posting nutty things on the internet late at night. In our next episode, we're going to get into another area of creative expression that flourished on MySpace, music.
The best thing that MySpace probably, its lasting impact was probably its impact on music and distribution. Anyone could be on MySpace and find out about like a little band from Long Valley, New Jersey, and get super into them. That's what MySpace gave us in the long term. That and like low-key racial trauma.
More on this next time on Main Accounts, the story of MySpace. Thanks for listening to Main Accounts, the story of MySpace, an iHeart original podcast. Main Accounts, the story of MySpace, is written and hosted by me, Joanne McNeil. Editing and sound design by Mike Coscarelli and Mary Dew. Original music by Elise McCoy. Mixing and mastering by Josh Fisher. Research and fact-checking by Austin Thompson, Jocelyn Sears, and Marissa Brown. Show logo by Lucy Quintanilla. Special thanks to Ryan Murdoch, Grace Views, and Bahid Frazier. Our associate producer is Lauren Phillip. Our senior producer is Mike Coscarelli. And our executive producer is Jason English. If you're enjoying the show, leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. Sadly, my MySpace page is no longer around, but you can find me on Twitter at Joe Mick. Let us hear your MySpace story. And check out my book, Lurking. Main Accounts, the story of MySpace, is a production of iHeart Podcasts.
Your new home journey starts at Fisher Homes, where everything is red, white, and new. Explore exclusive summer savings and start your journey by selecting your ideal home site and your dream community. Choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans and bring your style to life at the Lifestyle Design Center. Are you looking for a quick move-in ready home instead? Fisher Homes has options for those too. Fill out a form to connect with a new home advisor at fisherhomes.com to get started today before the sun sets on summer savings.
You wouldn't expect to hear that we're America's third best city for beer like this one. Or home to vibes like this. And this. It might surprise you that we're top 10 for immersive art that's like...
Whoa.
And...
Hmm.
Not to mention, we have one of the top zoos in the country. So can a city with the country's best pro soccer team, ranking as a top culinary destination in the world, be in your own backyard? Yes, Columbus. Plan your summer at experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.